You probably remember times as a kid when everyone is standing around and suddenly someone shouts, "Last one in the pool is a rotten egg," and everybody takes off running. Yes, I think we have a bit of pack animals in us, or maybe we learned it when we domesticated dogs. Is the person who shouts showing leadership? Now suppose a group of people are standing around and somebody shouts out, "Look out, a bear is coming." Present company accepted. Once again, everybody dashes off. Is the person who shouts showing leadership? And if there is leadership, then there must be followership. Most of us, in most areas of our lives, are probably followers, at least implicitly, even when nobody's watching. I'd argue that neither of the shouters are necessarily leaders, although they may be, because leader-follower is really a relationship thing. Somebody running from a bear may be out in front, but only because the bear is at the back. So here I am for an hour or so, labeled a worship leader. If I'm a good leader, I'll leave you with some ideas, or maybe a bit different slant on things. At least that's my intent. And if you're good followers, you won't fall asleep or text on your phone. But your impulse to do so depends in part on how good a leader I am. And ultimately, my impulse to be a leader has a lot to do with your willingness to put up with me for an hour or so. A good leader-follower relationship, as nearly as I can tell, depends on a lot of the things any good relationship requires: communication, shared values, and trust. Good leaders let their followers know what is expected of them, not only in terms of communication with the leader, but with the other followers. Not at the level of corporate mission statements, but at a personal level. Shared values is an impossible goal without good communication. And truly effective leadership involves trust between the leaders and followers, that the process is working, and that the group is more effective together than they would be separately. So what do we get from following a leader? Amy leads many of the services on Sunday. What do we get from her leadership? Well, we tend to explore this every spring at pledge time. More accurately, we explore our church experience then, and what we get from it. And, implicitly, what role Amy plays in shaping that experience. It's not a simple relationship. If we like the church experience and see Amy as actively involved in the things we like, then we feel comfortable with her leadership. History seems to indicate that most of us feel that way. If we like the experience but feel like she doesn't nurture the things we like, well, that's a different story. If we feel like she nurtures things we don't like, that's even worse. If we don't like the experience and feel like she's not leading us to a better place, then we'll probably find ourselves a new church. Even worse, if things aren't good and we think she isn't able to fix it, we'll leave before the collection. I'm not picking on Amy here. It's a bit easier to use the church as a model since that's where we are now. But this pattern shows up in everything we do: our jobs, our relationships, our hobbies. As leaders, at least of our own lives, we have areas where we feel confident and in control and are able to achieve success, whatever that looks like. And most of us at some point in our lives have led ourselves to a place where we wanted to be, only to find out that we really blew it. And sometimes you find yourself in a place you don't want to be and feel you have little or no control. Traffic accidents and medical conditions are common causes, but spouses and children can be a close second. The relationship between a leader and a follower is implicit in many, some would say all, human interactions. We all have wants, and we all have fears. Yes, you do. We enter into relationships, including leader-follower, because we get, or think we get, or hope we will get, something we value. I can hear you thinking, oversimplifying, what? This gets into a bundle of core issues. To what extent are we getting what we want? Are we fooling ourselves? Are we conflicted? Some part of us happy, others not? It goes without saying that mix up in this are issues about how you were parented, how your teachers and preachers and scout leaders and sports coaches treated you. Were they challenging, bullying, nurturing, overprotective, abusive? Was this what you wanted or needed? Did you trust them, love them? Did they trust or love you? By love, I really mean, did they get you and affirm who you were and what you wanted to become? Sometimes even bad leadership can propel you in the direction you want to go. I have a woman friend who was told by her high school guidance counselor, "You're pretty good at math. It's a shame you're not a guy." She went on to have a very productive career in a major Silicon Valley company. And I suspect she mentally gave that counselor a rude gesture every night while enjoying her career. So I invited you to look at your leaders, or perhaps your own leadership, the way we look at other relationships. Is this working? What do I want from it? Am I getting it? What do they want? Am I comfortable giving them what they want? What do followers get out of the act of following? While most leaders will be able to articulate some kind of goal, many people appear to follow to manage their fears. Fear can be a powerful emotion, and if you follow someone who makes you feel less afraid, then the direction you're being led is not the primary attraction. Most of us have had experiences where we got into trouble by doing something that made us less fearful, more accepted, and ultimately was a bad idea. To me, it's important that a leader lead us toward a goal rather than away from some negative place, a virtual bear. When you are going toward a goal, for example, saving enough to get a new car, the closer you get to the goal, the stronger your motivation is to reach it. If your goal is something you're moving away from, for example, losing weight, and your goal is to lose 25 pounds and you've already lost 20, it's less motivating. It's easier to tell yourself that one more piece of cake is not going to hurt that much. But there is a real irony here, because the same actions may be both negative and positive. If we ban a pesticide that makes people sick, and strawberry farmers go broke because their crops fail, or we promote solar power and destroy coal mining towns and families, reasonable people can come to see that the changes brought about are not universally positive, and those who feel damaged by the changes push back. I'm the most comfortable with leaders who announce a higher principle that is positive. For example, our environment should support and nurture our health. From this standpoint, it's easier to see that those people harmed by actions toward that goal may need support to have their fears addressed and help moving to a more sustainable process. One of the most important aspects of the leader-follower relationship is shared values. This doesn't mean the goals are the same. They can be different as long as everyone's clear about it. So a CEO might want to send a rocket to the moon, and a line worker at the company simply wants to earn enough to live in a comfortable house in a safe neighborhood. The problems come when the CEO tries to convince the worker to forego a raise so the moonshot can be successful. The biggest problems happen when the two sides don't even communicate that much, and being united against something negative is really hard to pull off. Being against global warming is a negative goal, like losing weight. Positive goals: make all houses have solar panels, improve public transportation, make cars get better gas mileage. These have an easier time of it and have been more successful. Organizing around something emotional and negative, particularly a fear, can create a lot of energy, but rarely anything effective or long-lasting. Such movements can be dangerous. Consider the Nazis. In the US, fear of immigration has led to widespread abuse and lawbreaking at the border, because acting out of fear is rarely effective and tends to suppress other mental constructs like empathy and common sense. The problem here is that it's hard to reach someone who's afraid that immigrants will put them out of work and try to get them to be afraid of global warming instead, or massive deficits, or constitutional meddling. Strong positive goals, cheaper universal health care, for example. There's still a fear component there, but it seems like a better road. One of my models for excellent leadership is a choir director. In this society, almost nobody sings in a choir to make money or to look better in someone's eyes. While singing is a pleasure by itself, harmonizing with other people increases the pleasure enormously. And sharing the music with an audience is a special treat. Without a choir director, it's nearly impossible to reach these goals. So their shared values of creating and sharing beauty. So how does a choir director direct a choir? The director must understand the choir's experience level, the composer's intention, the quality of the individual voices, and motivate the choir members to work hard in the absence of pay and to prioritize the choir over other activities. As I see it, the choir and the director ultimately need to develop a strong sense of trust in each other. The singers trust that the conductor will choose music they can sing and enjoy singing and perform well. And the director trusts that the choir will do the work to be ready to sing and to practice good followership when performing. In my career as a manager managing high-strung technical people, I came to see that the things that make a good choir director also make a good manager. Respecting individuality and diversity, building trust, and good communication. So when someone shouts, "Last one in is a rotten egg," I would say that's leadership only if they're in tune with the group and believe they would follow. And this means the group members must have some respect for the leader, or the leader will be the only one getting wet. So there has to be some two-way communication, maybe nonverbal, between the group and the leader, and enough trust in the followers and the leader that getting wet is what they'd all like to do. So yes, I'd say that person is probably a leader. When someone shouts out, "Look, a bear is coming," and starts running, the situation is less clear. Is the shouter running out of fear or consciously trying to remove the group from danger? In fact, we regularly celebrate heroes who, in similar situations, run into danger to help weaker people survive. The case for this being leadership is weak. To summarize, leaders need followers, and followers need leaders. Both sides must communicate to develop shared values and develop mutual trust. It's a relationship. Ask yourself, are the goals positive or negative? Be clear in your own mind what you're getting by following, and ask yourself what the leader is getting by leading. Honor the old maxim that you should never give anyone a leadership position who actually wants the job. Be especially wary of a relationship where followers appear to follow to ease their own fears. The emotional energy can easily take over and make the actual goals irrelevant and the process destructive.